Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sans Pants Radio, Australia's most American podcast network.
Ooh, why so blue? So many shades of sorrow.
Hey, what's Pac-Man, everybody? Welcome to the Cynical Cartoons podcast, where today I watch Steven Universe Future with my partner, Reed Ashley. Reed uses he, they pronouns. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at StopTweetingMia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant. My pronouns are she, her. And I'm here if you need to talk.
I want to keep on going. Want to be right here with you. I'd love to see your color shining through.
It's such a beautiful end of the series, or a middle chapter, or whatever it's going to be. Like, I feel like this is not the ending, specifically. It feels very much to me like an Empire Strikes Back, like, middle chapter.
Uh-huh.
I don't know how you feel on that. Do you think this is the ending?
No. I hope that it's a middle chapter, you know?
Yeah, I would love to see, like, Steven as an adult and the way that that works out. Because all of this just feels like... he's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. And it leaves it on such an ambiguous note. And it's so beautiful. But it's also like, there's more story here.
Yeah.
I feel like there's more to tell.
Yeah, but I do like the idea of creating a world where, you know, Steven, I feel like, is the epitome of a main character. Where he has very specific traits, but... a lot of the things he has can be attributed to a lot of different people. And I think he's a very relatable character. And I think that it's important to have the main character of a series where his role has been very defined from the very beginning to not have a concrete future.
Yeah,
and,
that's true.
And to
that's
suddenly
true.
Be in a place where, you know, you have the freedom to decide what you want to do. You know, and I think that's really important for young kids to see, especially like... growing up watching the show, you know, or even just like adults.
But also like that is 1000% because of the writing of the show, because
right.
like Rebecca Sugar is steering the ship in a way that like every time that the show like ends, quote unquote, you know, it's like, oh, that was the perfect message. Like that was the perfect message.
Yeah.
Then the movie came out and I was like, oh, that was the perfect message. Now I can, no, this was the perfect message. You
yeah.
know, it's just really amazing. Like what they can do with this show, like aimed at kids,
mm-hmm.
relatable to adults and telling stories that don't get told in media a whole lot.
Well, it's because this is one of the first examples we have of a female showrunner.
Yeah.
You know, and I think
and like a queer, like non-binary showrunner too. That
yeah, and she's pushed her own voice, you know,
mm-hmm.
and other people's voices
and, yeah,
to the
and
forefront.
Not to discredit
no.
the other writers
no.
in the room. We
That's
just don't
not
know their
saying.
Names.
No, I just I more mean that like you know she's been able to put a voice into this cartoon. It's not just like, here's Bugs Bunny and they're hitting each other's heads, you know?
Hey,
like,
don't bash on
this
Bugs
cartoon.
Bunny. Bugs Bunny is a fucking queer icon. Fuck you.
This cartoon has been very much about feelings and emotions from the very beginning, and that's
right.
only gotten stronger as the series has gone on, and that's really allowed Rebecca Sugar to put a lot of different voices and like stuff that we haven't really been able to see and voices that we haven't been able to hear in media a lot, you know, especially not
yeah.
in kids' shows. I think this show has really been groundbreaking for a lot of different reasons and in a lot of different ways. And I think that just the kinds of stories that you see in the show that are represented, I think, quite well, from ranging from like abuse to anxiety, now PTSD. I think that those are all really important stories that kids need to hear.
Well, I mean, and also looking at it from like a queer perspective, like it's amazing to see how far we've come in the last like 5 years in particular.
Mm-hmm.
Because Legend of Korra ended in 2014, and that was still like a time where it was like everybody involved in the creative process knew that they wanted to make these characters queer. They wanted to have a bisexual lead and have that be an aspect of her character. And then the studio was like, no, you can't do that. Well, maybe you can do it at the very end. And then they also were like, hey, we're going to like bury you. You're just fucking done.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to put you on the app. Nobody's going to see this. We're not going to promote it. And that was 6 years ago.
Well, and
you know,
God, that was heartbreaking because I watched it. I was watching Korra. I don't know if you were following it as it was coming out.
I was, but I wasn't like part of the fandom. So I didn't have any inkling.
It was just heartbreaking because I was watching it as it was coming out on TV.
I mean, and the thing is that Steven Universe went through a lot of the same shit, right? Like they had like a queer, non-binary showrunner that was like, hey, I want to have these two characters get married.
Right.
And that couldn't happen. And then
from day one,
pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and pushed it and eventually got that and eventually got to tell all of these stories, because it's not that Steven Universe is trans. It's that Steven Universe deals with things that are very relatable to like trans kids and like gender nonconforming kids.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting. I mean, it's funny how much this show can just like fucking attack me, you know,
you
like
personally.
Just like emotion bombs. Yeah, it's just so. I mean, I've been trying to talk about this Steven Universe future with you for like 3 months, like 3.5 months. When did it air? Like the end of March.
It's been a while.
Yeah, and it's like every time that I want to do it, I just like can't. I just fucking cry, and I have an anxiety
attack. Which, to be fair, every time I watch Steven Universe, I cry. So it makes sense that talking about it would make you want to cry.
I mean, and especially like what Steven Universe future deals with is all about the uncertainty of the future and things like that, sure. But like specifically the things that Steven deals with, like his anxiety and trying to bottle it all down and panic attacks and PTSD and then confronting the people that hurt you and like you have to pretend like everything is normal.
Yeah, especially, you know? Especially like in this show, all of the people who hurt Steven, you know,
are like his friends now.
Right. He's has like outwardly forgiven, but there's a difference between, you know, forgiving someone and forgiving, I don't know, the situation and healing. And I think that's important, that it's okay, you know, especially for kids to hear that message of sometimes people love you and they've hurt you in the past.
Right.
You know,
it just hit me on a really personal level because I've spent a lot of the last year confronting the fact that like I was abused like regularly growing up, like physically, emotionally, verbally, all of these things that I've just like repressed and hidden away.
Mm-hmm.
And for a long time, I was like, I feel like there's something there, but I just can't delve into it. You know, and like through therapy, I've like confronted that. And now that I'm like friends with those people that hurt me and we have a relationship that goes on because we've both grown past that point and we're not in that situation anymore. But now that I'm like realizing these things about my past, it's like, how do I continue a relationship with this person? And that was such an amazing scene for me where like he goes to talk to White Diamond and he's like, hey, what's wrong with me? Do you know why I have all these new powers? Do you know any way to help me? And she like allows him to take over her body so that they can talk about it. And then he has this moment of realizing like, hey, I have all the power in this situation. Like if I wanted to, I could fucking kill you. And like I've already forgiven you and you're like nice now and you're like basically my aunt. And like how do you confront that situation? You know, like somebody's apologized, but that doesn't mean that the things that hurt you didn't hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And him not dealing with it for all of those years, just like the idea that you have to pretend to be okay.
Yeah.
Or that you think that you're okay. And if you're outwardly emotionally distressed about the things that have hurt you, then you're a burden on the people around you. I don't know. It's just all such fucking heady stuff for a kid's show to tackle, you know?
Well, also the idea that like as a victim, you are the one who should be saying how you're hurt and what the other person did to hurt you.
Right.
You know, number one, an interesting thing is it's like, if you've hurt someone, like the diamond specifically has had me thinking that, like, if you've hurt someone, you are both responsible for hurting them, but also it's okay to be, I don't know, sad in that situation. I feel like that was a semi-unique perspective that we don't like see very often.
What do you mean?
I just mean like in that last scene, in the last episode, right, is it's like Blue Diamond and Yellow Diamond and White Diamond feeling remorseful and feeling sad.
Right.
But that the important takeaway from that is you can be sad in that situation, but like it's really not about them.
Right.
And that's the thing is, like, it does a really good job of taking the power away from the abusers in that situation of taking, like, the people who were in power and are making it about themselves even again. And, like, Connie really breaking down that situation and confronting them about it and being like, hey, like, literally, this isn't about you, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, and also you have these patterns that are built up throughout a lifetime, right? So like everybody sees Steven as like this like happy-go-lucky kid that's able to fix every situation, and he's able to bring anybody over to his side, and he's able to bring out the good in everybody. And that becomes expected of him.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt a lot of that like growing up and as a teenager. Everybody expects me to be funny all the time. And I love being funny. I wish that I could be funny all the time for them. But sometimes I'm sad and like I don't know how to manifest both of those things in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would kind of just like bury it deep down and be like, well, I'm funny all the time. I'm happy all the time, you know? And then the other side of it just like violently comes forward, you know?
Yeah, I think I sort of had a similar but just slightly different, where I was always the like the picked on kid, you know, the like gently teased, but frequently the gentle became more and more and more aggressive. When you're in that situation, a lot of times you're not allowed to call the other person out because then you're like a buzzkill,
right?
Yeah. Is that like you being the butt of the joke is the sort of ground that everyone else is standing on, and you're expected to have to be in that same position and laugh with everyone else, even when, you know, you're the target of that.
Yeah.
And I feel like as a happy-go-lucky person, a lot of times, I mean, I would laugh along a lot of times, but that doesn't always mean that it wasn't hurtful to me, you know?
I think that what you're getting at is that it's an interesting characterization for a kid's TV show to be like, the opposite of flanderization.
Mm.
I don't know if you know what that means. Flanderization
is Ned Flanders?
Yeah, like Ned Flanders from The Simpsons.
Great.
It's like this thing where like as a show goes on, the writers get such a good idea of what a character is like that they forget to like
make them human.
Yeah, make them human and innovate with them.
Yeah.
And so like Steven Universe kind of became a little bit flanderized. And not in a bad way. I love that character. But in a way where it's like, we know what this kid will do in every situation. And that's great, because that's how he takes on the diamonds. It's how he deals with fucking Spinel and Lapis and Peridot and everybody. But like to show us that Steven has a lot more to his character, and especially as he comes into like adolescence and becomes an adult.
And being angsty.
Yeah. I mean,
the angst and pettiness is okay, and they're human emotions, and you have to feel them and move past them, you know?
Yeah.
And you have to feel them in order to move past them. And it's okay to accept that you're hurt, and it's okay to accept that other people have hurt you.
Right.
And that, you know, it's okay for you to be healing and for you to feel sad.
Right. And I mean, also, like, the character, like, dealing with all of these, like, hormonal things also is just really interesting from the perspective of, like, a 9-year-old kid that started watching the show in season one would be around that age too.
Right.
And being on HRT and transitioning.
You fucking hormonal teen. You moody
it's
little
just,
bitch.
Yeah. A lot of the time I fucking get it.
Yeah.
Like what he's going through of that like thing of like, I feel sad because I'm directionless, and that makes me anxious, and that makes me angry, and that makes me mad because nobody can see that I'm angry. or that I can't talk about it in the right way, even though I have a lot more communication skills than Steven. I'm 26. Like, I figured myself out a lot more.
Yeah.
But, like, I find myself in a lot of situations, you know, like crying because my Chipotle order didn't show up. But it's not that I'm crying because of that. It's that that's the last straw on top of, like, a hard conversation I just had with my dad, transgender healthcare being attacked, weird attacks on trans people in the media, the Black Lives Matter movement, and, like, not having any movement on that. Like, all of these horrible things going on in the world. And then on top of all that, COVID. And then on top of all that, like, fucking everything.
Mm-hmm. And you hadn't eaten.
Right, exactly. And so I'm just, like, emotionally unstruck. Like, yeah. And I'm just, like, emotionally unwound to the point that it feels like that, where you're, like, you just want to fucking explode and just, like, some monster comes out of your back and you become, like, this horrible Godzilla thing that's going to go out and fucking stomp down the town because your burrito didn't show up.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not about the fucking food.
Yeah.
You know, for Steven, it wasn't about the last straw. It was about all of these things building up. I don't know why those motherfuckers never got that kid therapy. He really needed it.
He had never been to the doctor.
Yeah.
Which...
they're aliens. They don't know shit.
Yeah. Well, Greg is not an alien. Greg is a human man.
That's true. Greg is a human man who also probably has never been to the doctor. He's like, yeah, I mean, it kind of hurts when I pee, but I haven't been to the doctor in 20 years. My dad made me go when I was 18.
He goes to the doctor and they're like, I see you have a fracture that seems to have healed here. And they're like, yeah, my kid licked my knee and it healed. And they're like, and then they admit him to a psych ward. And that's why Greg doesn't go to the doctor.
Oh, my God. Yeah. And so the show just deals with all of these things in such a beautiful way. And my first time watching through Steven Universe Future, I remember that you cried a lot at the finale.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there with it.
Yeah.
Like, I was kind of just like, okay. This is kind of weird, like, what this
cried,
is
like,
doing.
You were like, let's record.
Yeah.
And then, like, two hours later, you were like,
and that's the same thing that happened when I watched the Steven Universe finale, the season 5 finale, was, like, the first time I watched it, I was like, wow, that was really good, powerful stuff, and I'm sure that someday I'll be able to emotionally react to it. And then I watched it again, like, a week later, and I was just bawling.
Because I did that first... the first time I watched something, and then also every time after that that I watched
it. Well, and that's the really great thing about the show is that, like, from an emotional standpoint, every emotional beat works so well, like, whether it's the first time watching it or after. And a lot of the time on rewatches, it works even better. We talked about in our Steven Universe episode about 9 months ago, I was saying, like, yeah, every time that I watch, what is it, like, Mindful Meditation, the episode with Here Comes a Thought, like, I cry every time I watch that.
Yeah.
And it's, like, the same thing here. Like, it's just so fucking much. And when he goes to see Dr. Maheshwaran and he has that discussion with his dad afterwards where he's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I felt like I was going to die so many times in my life, and I felt like I was in danger and I had to save the entire world. And I wasn't able to react to it at those times, you know, and now every time that I get, like, a splinter, I feel like the world is going to fall apart. Like, his specific quote is like, I should be feeling so good these days, but, like, how do I move on from all the stuff I've been through? How do I live my life if it always feels like I'm going to die? Yeah. And just, like, every time I watch that, I fucking bawl my eyes out because I've been there so many times, like, and didn't know why that was happening. Yeah. Like, in the middle of college, you know, I'm studying for an exam and I'm just, like, freaking out. And I'm like, why do I feel like I'm literally going to suffocate? Like, why do I feel like I'm drowning right now? I'm just, like, doing math homework. Anxiety is a fucking hell of a thing, you know, and PTSD specifically is a lot to deal with.
Yeah. Specifically with some of the stuff, I personally suffer from a lot of social anxiety is my personal brand of anxiousness. And the whole episode with him proposing to Connie gave me the worst secondhand embarrassment of my entire life. Mia can attest to this. Every time something, like, incredibly embarrassing shows
up, and run out of the room.
I will screech and run to the kitchen because I cannot handle watching it. It just makes me want to crawl out of my skin because every situation is just like, oh my God, I would die if I were here.
Yeah.
And that's simply, like, I have never evolved past that point. I am still in third grade mentality of I would die.
I mean, and it's so fucking embarrassing because I feel like we've all been there when we were like 15 and we were like, I'm going to marry this person. Mm-hmm. And you like imagine mm-hmm. your life having kids with somebody that you have a crush on or that you're dating when you're right. like 14 or 15.
Right.
And it's like, I knew fucking nothing. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to like propose to Connie and then we're going to be Stefani forever.
Oh my
it's
God.
Like, bro. Wow.
Yeah.
Like
they,
really
they do so much in 20 episodes.
Yeah. 20 11 minute episodes too. Yeah. Like they do so much with an 11 minute episode.
Yeah.
Where like Steven is only in like total annihilation destruction kaiju mood for like 10 minutes.
Right.
I just like that they changed up the format where like the original show, every episode ends on like a happy beat or like a happy note, you know?
Yeah.
And it always like star wipes into like, quirky joke, here we go, you know? Mm-hmm. And then now it's just like any episode can just end on like the most fucked up moment.
Yeah.
You know, like he shatters Jasper. Like the first shattering that we see in the entire show is by Steven himself. And it's like, wow, that's a lot to deal with. And then it's just like, yeah. It gets a little sound effect. It's like,
yeah, I love villains.
Yeah.
I love Jasper. A lot.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know. I love the characters in the show. I think they're all amazing and beautiful, and they've grown so much throughout the series. Jasper ripping out the grass is one of my favorite jokes.
Stupid little earthlings.
I don't know all of their names. It made me laugh so hard, and it's one of the first things in the first episodes. Here's the thing about Student Universe is I'm a big fan. I love it.
Great. I'm so glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rebecca Sugar is going to be so glad to hear it. It's really interesting that Steven spends all of his time walking around telling people like, hey, I'm going to help you find your purpose.
Yeah.
Like, hey, like Jasper doesn't want a new purpose. She wants to destroy. She wants to do what she did before. When he runs into the two Lapises that are terraforming a planet, even though they don't have to, they're like, we want to terraform a planet. And he's like, okay. But what if you didn't do that? What if you danced instead? But this entire time, like, he has no idea of where he's trying to go. And right. he's, like, trying to find his purpose by helping other people find theirs. And it's just that thing of, like, trying to help other people without being self-reflective for yourself.
Yeah.
Or being too self-reflective. And, like, thinking, like, I can just think my way out of this. I can just fix every problem that pops up. And then I'll be good and everybody will like me and everything will be okay. And it's fucking miserable.
I think it's also interesting just because I feel like Steven and Amethyst have had a really similar experience in terms of, you know, feeling broken, not feeling like having a place to belong, you know? And I think it's interesting that Amethyst has really come into herself.
Yeah.
And found herself through Little Homeworld. But, like, that's the thing is they've always been on really similar like emotional levels, but Amethyst is a lot older.
Well, it's funny because Amethyst, I think, was kind of at the same level that Steven is in Steven Universe Future when the show started.
Yeah.
Like she was already like a moody teen that didn't have a direction in her life, and she was mad that Steven came along because like she used to be the worst crystal gem and now Steven is, and so she's like, haha, like I'm not the worst one anymore. And as the show goes on, we see her have that trajectory that Steven sort of goes through in Steven Universe Future just to a much lesser extent.
Mm-hmm.
She like gets the sadness to the stressfulness, to the anxiety, to the anger, to the lashing out, and then comes full circle. And then by the time Steven Universe Future comes around, she's like ready to help Steven through all that stuff. And he doesn't think that he can be helped. Like he doesn't want to be helped because he's the person that helps other people.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when you're the person giving advice, you know, and you're the compassionate friend, not to say that, you know, the other gems aren't, but Steven really is the epitome of that.
Mm-hmm.
It can be hard to say that you need help. It's difficult to be the one that leans on other people when for so long other people have been leaning on you.
Right.
You know, and I think especially when you're the happy and joyous friend or when you're the happy and joyous like family member, it can be hard to feel okay being sad because, you know, that it's different and wrong.
Yeah.
And I think that's okay.
I liked all of the self-reflection that Steven has to do throughout the show as he's like getting all of these new powers and he's really scared of what the future is going to be like. And he's thinking about his mom the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like his journey with Pink Diamond with Rose Quartz is so interesting because she has sort of like a reverse redemption arc as the show goes.
Mm-hmm.
Like it starts off and she's like this like all powerful figure that everybody loves. And then as the show goes, we see more and more that she's flawed because we learn more about her past. In Steven Universe Future, we see that she was like very abusive, like it much more than what we've seen before. Like she was physically abusive towards her Pearl and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Steven reflecting on that and being scared of that, you know, it's like this thing of like seeing things that your parents have done or things that are recurrent in your family. And
like cycles of abuse.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Generational trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, fuck.
Yeah.
I'm 16. This is going to happen to me. And when's the day that I'm going to freak out and hurt people that love
right.
me?
Right. It's amazing how well the show handles, you know, Steven from going, am I my mother, to I don't want to be like my mother.
Yeah, right.
You know, and right. to sort of understanding who he wants to be and trying to figure out now that he knows what his mother is like, you know.
Right.
Like what her life was actually like and undergoing, you know, similar pretty destructive traumas. Because that's the thing is when someone is abused, they frequently like, you know, take that out on the people around them
yeah.
in the same way.
Right. I mean, I think it's interesting to watch Steven grow up as the show goes on because like in the show we see Steven, who started off as like the ultimate little annoying kid. You know, that just like nobody told him anything. He went off on his own adventures and just like hung out and cloned himself and did crazy stuff every week and turned into a cat. And now he's like outgrown the maturity of his surrogate moms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like this weird thing where like they see him as a kid still and he's like, I don't want to play tag with you.
Yeah.
Shut
well,
up.
Well, it's important to understand that they are thousands of years old.
Yeah, right.
And Steven grows very, very
quickly. They're stagnated. Yeah, yeah. They don't understand why he's changed so much so quickly.
Well, I think it's also, I think they are doing remarkably well considering how, in the grand scheme of things, like how fucking old they are
yeah.
and so much yeah. of their life has changed in the past, like, you know, 16 years since Steven existed.
Yeah, it's true. But I mean, it is relevant to the way that puberty works in general,
yeah,
where like one
I understand.
Day your mom, you know, wakes up and you're not playing Pokemon anymore. You're out there drinking hard and getting pussy.
No.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad. And I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
What was your favorite episode?
I really liked, I don't know sequentially where it took place, but I loved the roller rink episode.
Oh, SO6E18? No, okay. I don't know. I don't know, actually.
Okay.
yeah, that one was really good.
But I love Pearl. Pearl's one of my favorite characters in the show.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, because she's flawed, because she's, I don't know, I want to hug her all the time. but I love her and Bismuth, and I also love all of the homosexuals that were at the roller rink where she was, that she was like interacting with, like, right, all of the elder gays.
That like Pearl has a bunch of gay friends, yeah, that we've never seen before. Yeah, it's very, like, funny.
This fucking show is like this episode specifically that was just chock full of homosexuals and also like gay people who have worked on the show.
Right, right.
Which is, well, amazing.
And that's the really great thing about like organic representation, right?
Yeah.
Is that it doesn't have to be a joke that a character is gay in the background. It doesn't have to be a big heartfelt crying moment that a character in the background is gay. Dogcopter is gay.
Yeah.
Like, Dogcopter in the show proposes to his husband and, yeah, like, oh, cool, okay, I didn't know that Dogcopter was gay. Moving on. Like, it doesn't have, yeah, to be a thing, and it just has been for fucking ever.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to see, like, the way that, like, media nowadays, especially from, like, Disney, wants to brag about their amazing, like, representation. Because, like, 20 years ago, there would just be a side character that was gay, and that was the joke.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they still existed.
It was never like a casual, just understood thing,
right,
to be gay. And I think that's really important, especially in children's media.
Yeah.
But that's what happens when you get queer people telling queer stories.
Yeah.
Is,
yeah,
that's the problem with like a lot of queer and like gay and trans tropes, like,
right,
both of them. Like, is that the reason why they're bad is because there's only one character, right? It's like the bare your gaze trope. The reason that's a trope is because there aren't enough gay characters in a show for you to kill the only gay,
yeah,
person.
Exactly.
Is if you always kill the only gay person on the fucking show, it's like, yeah, you can have characters that suffer. That's okay.
Yeah.
But when
if Steven Universe wanted to kill 5 gays, we would still have 12 gays.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, is that's like, that's part of the reason why representation matters and why,
yeah,
it's important to have fucking more than just the sad sack trans story over and over and over again.
Right.
Is it's okay to just have characters fucking exist because queer people exist out of their trauma.
Well, when you see queer characters on screen all the time, it becomes so pedestrian and so normal. And people need that who don't live in LA.
Yeah.
Like, people need that because they have queer family and queer people that they know that they need to support. People need that because they are queer and they don't know it. Like, when I was watching The L Word,
yeah,
it just becomes so normal that you're watching a show starring 6 or 7 lesbians.
Yeah.
That's just like completely normal. And then I turned on another show and I was like, oh yeah, not everything.
Oh,
has
shit.
Any, yeah,
there's,
oh,
so many straight
I watched
people.
The entire show, god damn it, you know. Better start Generation Q again. But it's just so funny to watch a show like this that gets that right.
Yeah.
And it's like every character has the potential to be sexually fluid because who fucking cares?
Also, like, all of the characters are feminine, you know?
Right.
Like, most of the characters in the show are women or gems who are sort of
Female coded,
yeah, but pretty gender ambiguous.
Yeah, they're rocks.
Yeah, they're fucking rocks. Yeah, exactly. And to have the show based around this entire species of
queers,
of homosexuals, is very powerful and specific and makes it very fucking difficult,
yeah,
for Cartoon Network, which I really, really appreciate, is that,
right,
it's like, hey, you want a fucking love story? We're fucking 4 seasons deep, bitch, and these characters are in love and they're both women and you can't do anything, yeah, about it because all of the rocks are girls. And if you want any fucking love stories between these rocks, they're all going to be gay.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that this show managed to like start off as such a slow burn and be like, it's just like a fun story and there's fun music and there's cute characters and cute jokes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then as it goes, it brings in all of the queerness and all of the like very good representation.
Yeah.
Because it was just able to do that. Like,
yeah,
the first season doesn't have much of any of that. It just has like queer energy.
Yeah. And then after repeated punching by all of the storyboard artists and showrunners,
yeah,
that were on this fucking show.
Every fucking thing that you see in this show had to be fought for. I'm sure that by the end, the studio wasn't like, why does Dogcopter have to be gay? But I'm sure that if they tried to do that in season 2, they would have been like, Why does Dog Copter have to be gay?
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's the thing, is this is the culmination of years and years and years of battling.
Yeah. And the other thing that I wanted to say is that the show has queer aesthetics and it fucking owns it and it knows that it has that.
Yeah.
Like when I watched the trailer for Scoob, I was like, you know what? I think Velma's gay. And I think Velma is gay with this girl at the bowling alley because they're both queer coded and they both look gay and they both like have stereotypical lesbian traits to them. No, neither. Nothing. No, nope. No, nothing. And I was stupid enough to fall for that because studios want to buy into that. They want to buy into a queer aesthetic, but they don't want to fucking pay up and do it.
Yeah.
And also queer aesthetic has become the common...
The amount of fucking shows and movies that have had like a token gay character,
yeah,
and then refused to include like the one-off line.
Let's talk about the one Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom, yeah. Star Trek Beyond, Independence Day Resurgence. This is all off the top of my head.
Thor
what
Ragnarok.
Else? Thor Ragnarok. Holy shit, that one really hurt.
Yeah, Jurassic
completely
World.
Unnecessary to cut that out of the movie.
Jurassic
fuck you.
World really fucking hurt me because yeah. Daniela Pineda is so fucking beautiful,
yeah.
And she was so obviously actually gay in the movie. Like she literally, like they had the moment.
She had
where,
that little like kissy moment with the dinosaur, right? No. Who we know they're all female because yeah. they told us uh-huh. in the first movie.
Yeah, that's why. No, it was just like her and the side scientist, right? There's
yeah.
that moment where they're like, oh, they're going to kiss. And then she like smushes his face.
Mm-hmm.
Like she's obviously actually gay. And then they just cut out the joke line.
Right. When you get so close to having like this beautiful representation in a movie that you don't even
casual
fucking
representation.
Care about,
yeah.
by the way.
Right.
Like I didn't give a fuck about that movie. I was just like, oh, cool. Like I literally wanted to see it because she was like cute in the trailer. And I was like, She looks super gay, and I bet she's gay in the movie. Mm-hmm. And instead, you find yourself watching Bryce Dallas Howard and Chris Pratt make out, like, after they fucking had a horrible relationship in the first movie, and you're like, are straight people okay? What the fuck? Why is this happening right now?
And they're
I
like,
fucking
oh,
hate
but,
everything.
But she made a two-second joke that wasn't relevant, so we're just gonna cut that
yeah.
out. Because
yeah,
we need more of Chris Pratt flexing
it's
and
gross.
Making out with
it's
being
gross.
Straight.
It's gross.
We
it's
need
gross.
More straight people.
Speaking of Steven Universe future, though,
okay,
I really loved Shep.
Yeah.
Played by India Moore.
I love
that. That's incredible that they have a non-binary character played by a non-binary trans
Which,
feminine person.
Historically, they've done. They've
that
been
fucking
very,
rules.
Very, very powerful
yeah.
about doing, which I really fucking appreciate.
Mm-hmm. I just think it's great that they introduce a character who is non-binary. The drama of the scene is not about them being non-binary.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and they're super cute.
Yeah.
Just having a fucking human character who's mm-hmm. non-binary is really important.
Who's romantically desirable for yeah. a character that's been around this entire time. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, the amount of times that like a trans or non-binary or queer character is introduced just so that there can be like a sad sob story about how nobody understands them or accepts
right.
them.
Or murders them.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, we watched Disclosure today on Netflix. It's a documentary about trans representation in media and like intersectional trans representation. And it's real
it's
fucking
the mind.
Good. Yeah.
Just like hire trans people. Hire queer people.
How hard is that? You
That's
got
really
two
it.
Right here. You got two fucking queers. Well, I already have the microphone. I'll do it. Put me on.
Uh-huh.
What's up?
Well, I don't mean just for voice acting. I just mean for fucking now is the time.
Yeah.
For fucking
they're making an Animorphs movie, fucking hire me. I'll write the Animorphs movie. I don't give a fuck. I got a lot of good ideas about the Animorphs.
Like that's the thing is you'll get better stuff
yeah.
if you hire the people who, you know, who are
and,
going
and if you have a
things.
Diverse
yeah.
representation in your writer's room and in your cast. Like yeah. a trans person doesn't necessarily need to be writing trans stories. Even yeah. though if you're writing a trans story, you should have a trans person
yeah.
in there with you consulting or writing it. But like, it's great.
Hire queer people.
Yeah.
That's it.
I love India Moore's voice so much.
I love India
I wish
Moore.
That I sounded like them.
Yeah, their
just
voice is very
on pose
cute.
Too. Just
yeah, also they're very cute on pose. I agree. I follow them on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. I feel like I've got that similar thing of like, I look cute but also sad like all the time. And I've only really seen India Moore when they're acting. Like I haven't like seen an interview where they're happy. And most
yeah.
of the time on pose, they're pretty sad.
Yeah.
show about being a transgender woman in the 1980s in New York.
Yeah.
But it's a very similar...
Just the existential sad face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be like that.
The show has a whole lot of voice goals for me. Like, I would love to sound like Lapis Lazuli, mm-hmm. Stevani, mm-hmm. Shep, mm-hmm. who else?
My God, Stevani in the... Oh. Something I thought, like a little nugget that I thought was cute in the ice skating episode,
mm-hmm.
is that she's...
Amethyst.
Okay.
Keep going. I'll just do them as they come up. Ruby.
Is that Pearl got really excited about the infomercial and thought it was really cute.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of like her thing. She really liked that Rose really liked a commercial that Greg wrote or something. And she was like, oh, Rose would have loved this. And now like she really, really loves this little silly little jingle. And mm-hmm. also her and Bismuth are really cute.
Yeah, that was really good.
And I love Bismuth. I like that she's a strong, butch, powerful gem lady.
Mm-hmm.
And they should get married.
Also, just like Steven trying to fit in at skate night and not being able to. I get it, bud. I fucking feel it.
Yeah, the way that he... somehow apologetically and unapologetically delivers his horrifying, horrible lines, like of, aha, yeah, my mom is gonna try to murder me. She ripped my gem out. Ha, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it's like, most people just wouldn't say anything, Stephen, but you really said it. Oh, secondhand embarrassment was real and powerful in all of these episodes. And also, Connie is flawless, and I appreciate her consistent, just absolute level-headedness in the most ridiculous situations and mm-hmm. her, like, awareness of what's happening.
Spinel comes back. The diamonds come back, which was fun. I liked seeing Spinel again. It was very weird to see her not with a TV movie budget, where, like, all of her little, like, yeah. what is that called? Like, the... Laffy Taffy physics or whatever from like the 1920s look less impressive here, which is fine because she's only in the show for one episode and the story gets crossed.
Yeah,
it's fine.
I think there's still a lot of... I think that the storyboarders put a lot of fucking love into this.
Yeah,
and there are a lot of like really, really good segments. I love Steven when he gets buff after 3 days
of
training with
Jasper. That's so funny. I loved that.
I love his like anime boy aesthetic and
right.
his fucking pompadour and how buff he is. It's very powerful.
And also that he thinks that that's what a man is. Like that he thinks that that's how he should be and how he needs to be strong.
Right.
Is to be like this like angry punching holes in walls kind of kid, you know?
Mm-hmm. He's a beautiful young man.
Beautiful
pompadour.
I really loved, though, when he went and saw all of the diamonds and, like, they all have their own ideals of, like, how to fix him, you know, quote unquote, of he's like, I'm sad and I'm angry and I'm having emotional outbursts. And Blue is like, well, I'll give you this little cloud that'll just make you feel happy.
Mm.
And that's, like, this metaphor for, like, antidepressants and specifically people that aren't interested in being on antidepressants but, like, are told, like, that's the way that you fix this situation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just take this and you'll be happy no matter how you want to feel.
I understand, like, the antidepressant line, but I think it also it is more about trying to find a solution before, you know, like, solving the problem.
Mm.
Is that it's someone, like, throwing antidepressants out without also going to therapy.
Right,
you
exactly.
You know, is that it's important to solve the root of the problem, not just make someone happy, is really actually understand why someone's unhappy to begin with.
Well, and also that they don't really listen to him. Like, they've taken a new tact with everything. They're trying to be nice. They're trying to understand. But they're still being very forceful and, like, subjecting him to whatever they want to do.
And dismissive. Yeah.
Blue Diamond, like, gives him the happy cloud even though he doesn't want it and mm-hmm. makes him, like, forces him to be happy when he doesn't want to feel that way. And Yellow Diamond stretches him out and changes his physical form when he doesn't want to be that way. And White does what she does and he doesn't want to be that way and he, like, freaks out because of it.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's just people that, like, I've heard a friend of mine talk about this with going to therapy. Like, they'll tell their therapist something that they're going through and their therapist will, like, interrupt them mid-sentence and say, like, oh, I understand. Yeah, you should do this.
Mm-mm.
And it's like, well, that's not what you should do as a therapist. Like, fuck yeah. That, it sucks.
Or parents. I mean, yeah. Even just like yeah. parents, like trying to talk, you know, trying to be seen as an adult.
Right.
Trying to be seen as a dimensional person who's going through things and like really like being able to listen to people, especially teenagers. Like, fucking yeah. nobody listens to teenagers.
Yeah.
Everyone, like, especially they're just told that, you know, someone else knows what's better for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Steven hasn't really gotten necessarily a lot of that. Well, no, I guess he has. He's gotten a lot of people telling him that they know what's best for him.
Yeah, and also...
From everyone.
Yeah, and also that people, again, with the Flanderization thing, expect mm-hmm. something from him.
Right.
And they think they know what he wants at all times.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, Steven is sad, so Steven wants to be happy like he used to be. And it's like, well, that's not what's going on. He's 16 and he needs to be able to form his own identity. And he's having a hard time because he feels boxed in by what you all expect from him. Because, like, it's interesting to have a protagonist in a TV show who started off as, like, a 12-year-old, and now he's going into adulthood. All of his problems are solved. Like, what do you fucking do? You were, like, the chosen one. You were the one, you know?
Yeah.
And now what do you do?
Yeah.
Like, that's a little bit what, speaking of Legend of Korra, was about, was, like, Aang saved the world when he was 10, and then he had to live an entire life, and he had to have kids and have a wife and have all this stuff. And sometimes he wasn't a great dad because he wasn't prepared for that. Because he was a, you know, child soldier, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
And then Korra has to pick up the pieces and be like, I'm kind of Aang, but I'm not really. But everybody expects me to be like Aang because he was the greatest and he defeated the Fire Lord. And now what do I do?
Right.
You know?
I also really appreciate that Steven is pink. That's sort of a little thing, but
he's a pink diamond,
especially as, like, you know, a 16-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Having a main character boy who is represented by the color pink, I think is really, really fun.
Well,
and
yeah.
like really breaks a lot of, obviously very, very overtly breaks gender norms, you know.
And this show always has. Like,
yeah.
Steven isn't afraid to go out and wear a dress and do a dance. But
yeah.
if people call him Pink Diamond or call him a girl, he's like, no, that's not what's going on.
That's not who I am.
I'm not conforming to gender expectations put upon me by a society that I'm not even really a part of.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean that I'm a girl.
Right. I love that as just
yeah.
as a feminine person, as a feminine guy, you know, especially as a trans guy, I think like feminine male representation for kids and even for adults is really, really important, obviously, but like just how effortlessly they do it in the show and how he's just like turning pink and everyone's, you know, no one's worried that he's turning pink. They're worried because he's not supposed to be pink, not because he's the color
right.
pink, you know, and he just has a pink jacket and
right. And
he's super cute.
I think that's the way a lot of gender non-conforming people feel about him as a character in the
mm-hmm.
show in general.
Like, yeah.
My friend who I put onto the show like yesterday, I told to watch all of it. He had already seen Steven Universe and the movie.
Mm-hmm.
He just hadn't watched Steven Universe Future yet. And like his main takeaway from it today after watching like 5 or 6 episodes is like, I love that Steven is allowed to be like feminine.
Yeah.
Because I'm trans masculine and I also have like a feminine side to me and I'm happy that I can see characters express that.
Mm-hmm. It's super cute.
It's amazing.
It's super important.
Yeah.
Especially
for kids.
Yeah. Yeah. For like kids and teens and understanding that, you know, you can be effeminate or, you know, and have emotions and be happy. Not happy, but like be, you know, loving.
Right.
And empathetic, you know,
right.
is really important for boys to see. And I don't know how many, I don't know what the demographic of Steven Universe is. I don't know what the target audience is for kids, to be completely honest, because I am a grown-ass adult and I love this show.
Yeah, right.
But I think something that is so subtle within the show is really important to see. It's so easy to, like, brush over. But I think, like, it's not really something that, like, the pink character is always the girl.
Yeah.
And to have the only boy character, like, the only main male character in the show to be pink is just really cute.
Yeah, and Lars is pink, too.
Oh, and Lars turned pink.
Yeah.
I forgot Lars turned whole-ass pink.
I mean, it's just a really great message in the end where it's like, well, Steven, not everything is fixed.
Yeah.
This horrible thing happened. He's moved past it a little bit. It's been 6 months since the kaiju incident, and he's in therapy.
Yeah.
Which is a good moment to end it on. Like, Steven's in therapy. He's going to sort of figure himself out.
Yeah.
Because the thing about it that I love that the show really portrays is, like, after the mess, the feelings are still there. Those feelings of, like, guilt and shame that he had, of, like, he turned over because he couldn't talk to people about the way that he was feeling.
Yeah.
It wasn't because he was angry and he did horrible things. It was that he did horrible things because he couldn't talk to anybody because he wanted to put on a performance for people of what he was feeling. And so he felt like he was, like, getting away with it. And what he was getting away with was, like, feeling sad and angry.
Yeah.
And that's such, like, a very, very relevant teenage feeling.
Yeah, of being sad and, but not wanting to tell the adults in your life about it.
Right. And also that, like, after he changes and then he's saved by a big group hug, it's Steven Universe. Of course, that's how they're going to end the show. After all of that, still the first thing that he says is, like, I'm sorry. Like, he just did this. He had this horrible transformation. He hated it. Everybody was really concerned for him, and they all came together to save him and tell him that he was okay and that it was okay for him to be sad. Mm-hmm. And afterwards, all we could do is just, like, cry about it and keep on saying he's sorry. And I fucking get that.
Yeah.
Like, when all you can do is just, like, say that you're sorry for having feelings because you've been coded your entire life to feel that way.
Yeah.
And whether that's something that you've inflicted on yourself or something that society has put on you, you know, like, stop crying like a little fucking girl, or, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah.
I think that's good.
It's good representation.
Yeah. The writers on this show clearly have emotions.
Hey,
and
they
went
did
through
that.
Puberty.
Hey, did you ever think about that they did that?
Huh. No, I never thought about that.
Consider. They did that.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, they end everything with, like, that quintessential middle chapter feeling, at least for me and for you, I guess, too. But, like, I don't feel like this is the ending of the show. I think all the writers have been sort of coy about, like, people ask them, is this the end? And they're like,
this is the last episode of Steven Universe Future.
Right, exactly. It's like, okay, so clearly we're going to deal with him as an adult a little bit. And I'm stoked for that.
I fucking hope so.
Like, with Adventure Time coming back, it feels like, when they have a show that has this emotional depth to it, they're not just going to, like, wrap
it. Sure. Well, you know? Yeah. And when they have a really, like, devoted, rabid audience.
Yeah.
I think Steven Universe has its own little subsection of very, very devoted. I mean, a huge subsection of very devoted fans. And
it's
I think
true.
Adventure Time does, too.
Yeah.
I think, like, those really, like,
bubbling fans, you mean?
Yeah.
Specifically,
yeah.
Like, queer people are obsessive and weird about things.
No.
Yeah.
No, I just mean that, like, has a very strong fan base. You know, the companies want to continue, hopefully.
Mm. Yeah, I'm stoked to see where it goes, whether that's a comic book or, like, more show. I would love to see Steven as an adult. I think that'd be a really fun story to tackle.
I think it'd be very cute.
Yeah.
I hope he has long hair, long curly hair.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Hello.
I appreciate you.
Well, I
love you.
Here.
You're great.
I love you too.
Where can people find you online?
You can follow my Twitter at Shovel Ashley.
And I'm on Twitter at Stop Tweeting Mia. Thank you for listening to the Cynical Cartoons podcast for another week. And as always, I'm your host, Mia Marchant. And I'm here if you need to talk.
Steven?
Connie, will you marry me?
What?
Let's get married and live as Stevani.
What?
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from, like, 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.